The Golden Bough. A Study of Magic and Religion. By Sir James George Frazer. This audiobook was produced by Klaus-Dieter Mond, Rastatt, Germany and is published under the conditions of the Gutenberg Organization. Chapter 22. Tabooed Words. Section 1. Personal names tabooed. Unable to discriminate clearly between words and things, the savage commonly fancies that the link between a name and the person or thing denominated by it is not a mere arbitrary and ideal association, but a real and substantial bond which unites the two in such a way that magic may be wrought on a man just as easily through his name as through his hair, his nails, or any other material part of his person. In fact, primitive man regards his name as a vital portion of himself and takes care of it accordingly. Thus, for example, the North American Indian regards his name not as a mere label, but as a distinct part of his personality, just as much as are his eyes or his teeth, and believes that injury will result as surely from the malicious handling of his name as from the wound inflicted on any part of his physical organism. This belief was found among the various tribes from the Atlantic to the Pacific, and has occasioned a number of curious regulations in regard to the concealment and change of names. Some Esquimaux take new names when they are old, hoping thereby to get a new lease of life. The Tolampos of Celebes believe that if you write a man's name down you can carry off his soul along with it. Men savages at the present day regard their names as vital parts of themselves, and therefore take great pains to conceal their real names, lest these should give to evil-disposed persons a handle by which to injure their owners. Thus, to begin with the savages who rank at the bottom of the social scale, we are told that the secrecy with which among the Australian Aborigines personal names are often kept from general knowledge, arises in great measure from the belief that an enemy, who knows your name, has in it something which he can use magically to your detriment. An Australian black, says another writer, is always very unwilling to tell his real name, and there is no doubt that this reluctance is due to the fear that through his name he may be injured by sorcerers. Amongst the tribes of Central Australia every man, woman, and child has, besides a personal name which is in common use, a secret or sacred name which is bestowed by the older men upon him or her soon after birth, and which is known to none but the fully initiated members of the group. This secret name is never mentioned except upon the most solemn occasions. To utter it in the hearing of women or of men of another group would be a most serious breach of tribal custom, as serious as the most flagrant case of sacrilege among ourselves. When mentioned at all, the name is spoken only in a whisper, and not until the most elaborate precautions have been taken that it shall be heard by no one but members of the group. The native thinks that a stranger knowing his secret name would have special power to work him ill by means of magic. The same fear seems to have led to a custom of the same sort amongst the ancient Egyptians, whose comparatively high civilization was strangely dashed and checkered with relics of the lowest savagery. Every Egyptian received two names, which were known respectively as the true name and the good name, or the great name and the little name. And while the good or little name was made public, the true or great name appears to have been carefully concealed. Abraham and child receives two names, one for common use, the other a secret name which none but his father and mother should know. The latter is only used at ceremonies such as marriage. The custom is intended to protect the person against magic, since a charm only becomes effectual in combination with the real name. Similarly, the natives of Nias believe that harm may be done to a person by the demons who hear his name pronounced. Hence the names of infants, who are especially exposed to the assaults of evil spirits, are never spoken. And often in haunted spots, such as the gloomy depths of the forest, the banks of a river, or beside a bubbling spring, men will abstain from calling each other by their names for a light reason. The Indians of Chulu keep their names secret and do not like to have them uttered aloud. For they say that there are fairies or imps on the mainland or neighboring islands who, if they knew folks' names, would do them an injury. But so long as they do not know the names, These mischievous sprites are powerless. The Araucanians will hardly ever tell a stranger their names because they fear that he would thereby acquire some supernatural power over themselves. Asked his name by a stranger, who is ignorant of their superstitions, an Araucanian will answer, "I have none." When an Ojibwe is asked his name, he will look at some bystander and ask him to answer. This reluctance arises from an impression they receive when young, that if they repeat their own names it will prevent their growth, and they will be small in stature. On account of this unwillingness to tell their names, many strangers have fancied that they either have no names or have forgotten them. In this last case, no scruple seems to be felt about communicating a man's name to strangers, and no ill effects appear to be dreaded as a consequence of divulging it. Harm is only done when a name is spoken by its owner. Why is this? And why in particular should a man be thought to stunt his growth by uttering his own name? We may conjecture that to savages who act and think thus, a person's name only seems to be a part of himself when it is uttered with his own breath. Uttered by the breath of others, it has no vital connection with him, and no harm can come to him through it. Whereas, so these primitive philosophers may have argued, when a man lets his own name pass his lips, he is parting with a living piece of himself, and if he persists in so reckless a course, he must certainly end by dissipating his energy and shattering his constitution. Many a broken-down debauchee, many a feeble frame wasted with disease, may have been pointed out by these simple moralists to their awestruck disciples as a fearful example of the fate that must sooner or later overtake the profligate who indulges immoderately in the seductive habit of mentioning his own name. However we may explain it, the fact is certain that many a savage evinces the strongest reluctance to pronounce his own name, while at the same time he makes no objection at all to other people pronouncing it, and will even invite them to do so for him in order to satisfy the curiosity of an inquisitive stranger. Thus in some parts of Madagascar it is taboo for a person to tell his own name, but a slave or attendant will answer for him. The same curious inconsistency, as it may seem to us, is recorded of some tribes of American Indians. Thus we are told that the name of an American Indian is a sacred thing, not to be divulged by the owner himself without due consideration. One may ask a warrior of any tribe to give his name, and the question will be met with either a point-blank refusal or the more diplomatic evasion that he cannot understand what is wanted of him. The moment a friend approaches, the warrior first interrogated will whisper what is wanted, and the friend can tell the name, receiving a reciprocation of the courtesy from the other. This general statement applies, for example, to the Indian tribes of British Columbia, as to whom it is said that one of their strangest prejudices, which appears to pervade all tribes alike, is a dislike to telling their names. Thus you never get a man's right name from himself. But they will tell each other's names without hesitation. In the whole of the East Indian archipelago the etiquette is the same. As a general rule, no one will utter his own name. To inquire, "What is your name?" is a very indelicate question in native society. When in the course of administrative or judicial business a native is asked his name, instead of replying he will look at his comrade to indicate that he is to answer for him, or he will say straight out, "Ask him." The superstition is current all over the East Indies without exception, and it is found also among the Mota and Motamota tribes, the Papuans of Finskhaven in North New Guinea, the Nufoas of Dutch New Guinea, and the Melanesians of the Bismarck Archipelago. Among many tribes of South Africa, men and women never mention their names if they can get anyone else to do it for them, but they do not absolutely refuse when it cannot be avoided. Sometimes the embargo laid on personal names is not permanent. It is conditional on circumstances, and when these change it ceases to operate. Thus when the Nandi men are away on a foray, nobody at home may pronounce the names of the absent warriors. They must be referred to as birds. Should a child so far forget itself as to mention one of the distant ones by name, the mother would rebuke it, saying, "Don't talk of the birds who are in the heavens." Among the Bangala of the Upper Congo, While a man is fishing and when he returns with his catch, his proper name is in abeyance and nobody may mention it. Whatever the fisherman's real name may be, he is called Mwell without distinction. The reason is that the river is full of spirits, who, if they heard the fisherman's real name, might so work against him that he would catch little or nothing. Even when he has caught his fish and landed with them, the Bai must still not address him by his proper name, but must only call him Well. For even then, if the spirits were to hear his proper name, they would either bear it in mind and serve him out another day, or they might so mar the fish he had caught that he would get very little for them. Hence the fisherman can extract heavy damages from anybody who mentions his name, or can compel the thoughtless speaker to relieve him of the fish at a good price so as to restore his luck. When the Sulkai of New Britain are near the territory of their enemies the Gatay, they take care not to mention them by the proper name, believing that were they to do so, their foes would attack and slay them. Hence in these circumstances they speak of the Gatay as Olapsik, that is, the rotten tree trunks, and they imagine that by calling them that they make the limbs of their dreaded enemies ponderous and clumsy like locks. This example illustrates the extremely materialistic view which these savages take of the nature of words. They suppose that the mere utterance of an expression signifying clumsiness will homoeopathically affect with clumsiness the limbs of their distant foemen. Another illustration of this curious misconception is furnished by a Kaffir superstition that the character of a young thief can be reformed by shouting his name over a boiling kettle of medicated water, then clapping the lid on the kettle and leaving the name to steep in the water for several days. It is not in the least necessary that the thief should be aware of the use that is being made of his name behind his back. The moral reformation will be effected without his knowledge. When it is deemed necessary that a man's real name should be kept secret, it is often customary, as we have seen, to call him by a surname or nickname. As distinguished from the real or primary names, these secondary names are apparently held to be no part of the man himself, so that they may be freely used and divulged to everybody without endangering his safety thereby. Sometimes in order to avoid the use of his own name a man will be called after his child. Thus we are informed that, the Gippsland blacks objected strongly to let anyone outside the tribe know their names, lest their enemies, learning them, should make them vehicles of incantation, and so charm their lives away. As children were not thought to have enemies, they used to speak of a man as, the father, uncle, or cousin of so-and-so, single quote naming a child. But on all occasions abstained from mentioning the name of a grown-up person. The authors of Poso in Celebs will not pronounce their own names. Among them, accordingly, if you wish to ascertain a person's name, you ought not to ask the man himself, but should inquire of others. But if this is impossible, for example, when there is no one else near, you should ask him his child's name, and then address him as the father of so-and-so. Nay, these authors are shy of uttering the names even of children. So when a boy or girl has a nephew or niece, he or she is addressed as uncle of so-and-so, or aunt of so-and-so. In pure Malay society, we are told, a man is never asked his name, and the custom of naming their parents after their children is adopted only as a means of avoiding the use of their parents' own names. The writer who makes this statement adds in confirmation of it that childless persons are named after their younger brothers. Among the Lantidiaks children as they grow up are called, according to their sex, the father or mother of a child of their father's or mother's younger brother or sister, that is, they are called the father or mother of what we should call their first cousin. The Chifas used to think it discourteous to call a bride by her own name, so they would call her, the mother of so-and-so, even when she was only betrothed, far less a wife and a mother. Among the Kukis and Zemis or Kachanagas of Assam their parents drop their names after the birth of a child and are named father and mother of so-and-so. Childless couples go by the name of, the childless father, the childless mother, the father of no child, the mother of no child. The widespread custom of naming a father after his child has sometimes been supposed to spring from a desire on the father's part to assert his paternity, apparently as a means of obtaining those rights over his children which had previously, under a system of motherkin, been possessed by the mother. But this explanation does not account for the parallel custom of naming the mother after her child, which seems commonly to coexist with the practice of naming the father after the child. Still less, if possible, does it apply to the customs of calling childless couples the father and mother of children which do not exist, of naming people after their younger brothers, and of designating children as the uncles and aunts of so-and-so, or as the fathers and mothers of their first cousins. But all these practices are explained in a simple and natural way if we suppose that they originate in a reluctance to utter the real names of persons addressed or directly referred to. That reluctance is probably based partly on a fear of attracting the notice of evil spirits, partly on a dread of revealing the name to sorcerers, who would thereby obtain a handle for injuring the owner of the name.